WYPR is here to keep you connected to your community. And as our communities change amid the coronavirus pandemic, that connection is more important than ever before. Member support makes it possible. And if you can, we hope you'll help us out. If you're a sustaining member, consider increasing your monthly pledge or become a new member with a first-time gift. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link. And thanks.
This is Anibon Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report. As indicated by writer Nelson Schwartz, the great American job creation machine has begun to falter, manifesting signs of wear and tear in the context of an intensifying trade war with China and a softening global economy. The latest evidence arrived earlier this month when the Labor Department indicated that the nation added 130,000 jobs on net in August, below what analysts had anticipated. The number of jobs created would have been even lower but for the addition of 25,000 temporary census workers. The report was not completely bleak, with wages rising at a healthy clip and the fraction of adults participating in the labor force rising. The proportion of Americans between the prime working ages of 25 and 54 who were employed reached 80% in August, the best showing of the current expansion. Still, the private sector added just 96,000 net new positions in August, representing a sharp deceleration from earlier this year. The report also revised estimated job gains for June and July downwards by a total of 20,000 jobs. Many economists have concluded that the employment data are consistent with both a slowing U.S. economy and expanding risk of recession. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report. After three consecutive years of growth, American incomes were essentially flat in 2018, according to recently released figures from the U.S. Census Bureau. According to the Bureau, median household income in 2018 was a bit less than $63,200. That represented an uptick of 0.9% from the prior year. But census officials indicate that the difference was not statistically significant based on figures adjusted for inflation. While incomes failed to rise, or at least rise significantly, America's poverty rate declined last year to 11.8%, a decline of half a percentage point from 2017. As indicated by the Wall Street Journal, that represented the fourth consecutive annual decline in the nation's rate of poverty. It was also the first time the official rate of poverty fell meaningfully below its level at the onset of the recession in 2007. The share of Americans who lack health insurance, however, rose for the first time since 2009. Last year, 8.5% of people, or nearly 28 million Americans, did not have health insurance at any point during the year. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday Morning Economic Report. Earlier this month, California's lawmakers approved a statewide cap on monthly rent covering millions of tenants. Specifically, the bill limits annual rent increases to 5% after inflation and offers new barriers to eviction. As reported by the New York Times, this helps supply a bit more housing security in the state associated with the nation's highest housing prices and a rapidly expanding homeless population. Predictably, the measure garnered the support of tenants groups, but it was also supported by the California Business Roundtable, which represents leading employers, and went unopposed by the state's largest association of landlords. California's moves to protect renters from sharp increases in rent and to reduce the probability of eviction may induce other states to pass similar measures. Only the District of Columbia and four states, California, New Jersey, New York, and Maryland, are home to communities with some form of rent control. Moves to expand rent control through ballot initiatives or through legislation have arisen since 2017 in about a dozen states, including Washington State, Colorado, and Nevada, according to the National Multifamily Housing Council. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday Morning Economic Report. At some of the world's largest banks, small teams of employees are striving to calculate what may prove to be one of the most important numbers any financial institution will ever disclose: how much the assets on their balance sheet are contributing to global warming. after record high temperatures ravaged Europe in July and California's wildfires led to the January bankruptcy of utility PG&E Corporation, dozens of global banks, insurers, and pension funds are considering how their loans, policies, and investments are contributing to climate change. As reported by Bloomberg, last year, the United Nations warned that absent dramatic new limits on global temperature increases over the next decade, humanity could experience food scarcity, mass migrations, and instability as soon as the year 2040. While bank operations, including corporate offices and employee travel, contribute to carbon release, climate activists are more focused on the emissions that banks help make possible through their loans and other services to companies. ING is among a group of European banks that have indicated that they will align their lending with the goal of keeping global warming below 2 degrees Celsius, which translates into about 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Friday Morning Economic Report. As indicated by writer David Yaffe Bellany 3 years ago, the National Labor Relations Board issued a landmark ruling that provided teaching and research assistants at private universities a federally backed right to unionize. The decision paved the way for students at universities across America to hold legally binding union votes. But things haven't worked out as many graduate students and others who provide services had anticipated. Despite holding successful elections, students at the University of Chicago, Yale, Boston College and elsewhere have faced opposition from college administrators. The regulatory and political landscape has also shifted since 2016. Recently, the National Labor Relations Board proposed a new regulation that would effectively reverse its prior decision, stripping unionization rights from teaching and research assistants at private universities. Graduate student organizations have argued for years that their teaching responsibilities render them employees as well as students. Many of these students hold office hours, lead field trips, and oversee discussion sessions. Despite the obstacles, union organizers at Tufts recently negotiated a contract that includes paid parental leave and a substantial increase in the graduate student stipend. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.